Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is December 2nd, 2021. And in my podcast the last few weeks, I have been delving into financial and retirement planning for Americans abroad. And through two previous podcasts, one with Virginia Latoura Jeeker and one with Mr. L.B. Ivan, Raymond James, I've learned a good deal about Social Security, and that prompted me to go further in trying to learn more. And I came across a wonderful presentation by today's guest. So I'd like to introduce to you Dan Mazzola, who is, I actually see him as a all roads lead to Dan type of investment counselor, tax planner, Social Security expert, and I can tell you, I will give you the link to one of his presentations. This should be great because probably Social Security is out of mind for most people, but certainly Dan's presentation convinced me that this is something everybody's got to know a lot more about, and I welcome Dan as being, I think, the perfect person to help us some more in this area. So welcome, Dan. How are you today?
Very well, John. Thank you for inviting me to your podcast.
Well, really looking forward to this. Okay, let's begin with the basics, very basic. U.S. Social Security, what is it that makes somebody entitled to it?
Social Security, they would have to have 40 quarters of earnings. And in order to get those quarters, you'd only have to work, the maximum amount you can get any one year is four quarters. So it really takes about 10 years to become eligible. And in order to get those quarters, you have to earn about a little over $5,000 a year. So it's pretty easy to get the quarters for the year. And after getting those quarters, as long as they total 40, then you're eligible for Social Security.
So the okay, that's great. Now, you know, as you know, the people I'm working with are Americans abroad. So some of those people would move, say, outside the United States after having gotten their 40 quarters. But what if somebody has, say, 20 quarters and they leave the United States and then they move to, say, Canada and they are in the Canada pension plan for, say, 20 years? Does that allow, that gives them entitlement to U.S. Social Security under a totalization agreement?
They're going to need all those quarters, John.
So they're going to add the 20 and the 20, and that'll give them the 40.
Right.
Okay. So I think that's an important point that, you know, Americans abroad generally are not, certainly not disentitled to Social Security. And they can often, if there's a totalization agreement, use years paying into another country's pension plan to sort of make sure they end up with the 40. Okay. So 40 quarters, where do you go from there? How much do people get for Social Security payments anyway? I mean, how's that calculated?
It's calculated the, it works out to be, it's kind of on a different tiers they have. Well, first of all, it's based on your highest 35 years of earnings. So you have to have 35 years of earnings. You don't have to qualify, you don't have to earn those 35 years, but it's based on your highest 35 years. So let's say you only have 30 years, for example. That means you're going to have 5 years of zero earnings. So the benefit is going to, that's going to hurt you. That's not going to help you. So you want to have 35 years of earnings. If you come up a little short, we always recommend going back and getting those extra years, because that's really what the formula is based on, a 35-year earnings history. And then it works out to be the first couple of $100, you're taxed at a certain rate, and then the next 100 and so on. So the formula is kind of complicated, but I would stress to people that they want to have a full earnings history or as long as an earning history as they can. And that would be, again, 35 years.
So this would mean practically that there might be people who, if they were concerned about maximizing Social Security, who might choose to work more years to simply accumulate some higher earning years. Is that correct?
Right, right. Again, we always stress people that you want to work as much as you can. It can't hurt you to have a long earnings history. It can only help you. So if you come up a little short, 30 years, 32 years, try to go back to work, get those earnings, get that 35 years, because that's going to mean that you don't have any zeros in your record, and you certainly don't want zeros. That's going to affect your benefit.
Okay, very, very interesting. Now, so at what age can people, if they chose to, could they begin to access Social Security benefits?
The earliest age you'd be able to claim Social Security is 62. All right. Most people have a full retirement age of between 66 and 67. That being said, the earliest that you could collect is 62. But if you do collect at 62, your benefit will be reduced and will be reduced permanently. You're never going to get an increase later in life. So we always recommend to people wait as long as they can. But if they want, they can certainly start at age 62.
Okay, at a permanent financial cost. Now, you just used a phrase, full retirement age. Could you explain what that means?
Well, for most people in the United States at this time, their full retirement age is between 66 and 67. So they have to wait until that full retirement age to be ordered to claim their full benefit. So let's say somebody was born in 1955. Their full retirement age would be 66 and 2 months, which means they would have to wait until they were 66 and 2 months of age to collect their full benefit. If they collected any time before then, it would be a reduced benefit.
So full retirement age is the marker where they get full benefit.
Right, full retirement age.
Earlier than that, permanently lower benefit. But now looking at your presentation, one of the points that you make upside down, sideways, diagonally, and I think fairly convincingly, is that it's probably a good idea to delay even longer, if possible. Is that correct?
That's correct. Each month that you delay after your full retirement age, your benefit goes back up 2/3 of 1%, which works out to be a nice round 8% per year. So if you can wait a year after your full retirement age to start collecting, you'd be collecting 108%. Okay, and that goes on till age 70. At age 70, the delayed credits stop. So the latest you want to collect Social Security is at age 70. You don't want to delay any more than that. But if you can wait until age 70, John, you'd be getting almost an extra third, 132%, by waiting to collect. So as people are living longer and longer lives, we find it is very important to them from financial planning perspective to try to delay as long as they can. And if they can delay it until 70, that normally works out to be to their advantage, assuming they live a long life, of course.
Right. Now, this is a discussion. I mean, whether it's U.S. Social Security or, you know, I'm in Canada, so Canada Pension Plan. I mean, I'm always seeing this discussion going on about, you know, whether to get these benefits early on or delay. And, you know, you yourself in your presentation anticipate the actuary and making the argument, well, you know, it really doesn't make much difference in terms of the amount that you actually are paid out, whether you take it earlier or whether it's later. But you disagree with that for other reasons. And I'd like to invite you to elaborate on that a little bit, okay? Why, in your view, is it almost always better for people to wait if they can?
People are living longer lives these days, John. I mean, my parents are both in their 80s, and it seems to me that as people live longer lives, they're going to incur a lot more in medical expenses. I know in the U.S., the idea that Medicare covers all my expenses is a falsehood. So people, as they live longer, they're going to incur a lot more in medical expenses. By waiting to collect Social Security, they're in a much better position to have that extra money to meet those medical expenses. So I always get a little upset when people say, well, you have to live to this year or you have to live to that year. I would stress or emphasize that you should expect to live a long life. You know, don't underestimate your life expectancy, but rather expect to live a long life. And having that extra Social Security is going to help you if you do lead that long life. It's a form of longevity insurance. That's the way I talk about it in the presentation. Longevity insurance, protection against the financial challenges living longer than anticipated. Again, you want to assume you're going to live a long life and not that you're going to go in your 60s or 70s.
Well, I mean, I certainly think that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's, I mean, that's certainly, you know, where my instincts on this type of thing would be. You know, but there is this, you know, there's a lot of noise out there, you know, encouraging people to, you know, take these benefits early on. You know, one of the things that really, really surprised me about this, and like most people, I put almost no thought of my life into things like Social Security, Canada Pension Plan, what have you. But one of the things that I found amazing, you know, looking at these, at the situation, particularly your presentation, was that for families, there's a tremendous carryover effect from your Social Security entitlements to, say, a spouse or, you know, survivors or something. And, you know, at first I found this hard to believe. But I really would like to, you know, go through this and break it down a little bit because, you know, for example, you know, there's a lot of U.S. citizens in Canada and, you know, like people all over the world, they often have spouses. And let's begin by talking about spousal benefits that people get from one Social Security.
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind that Social Security began in the U.S. in 1935 under President Franklin Roosevelt. At that time, most women were not in the workforce, or if they were, they were limited to certain jobs, teachers, nurses, things like that. So the spousal benefit came about just because this is a way for the government to reward their efforts for maintaining the home, caring for the children. So I think that's how the spousal benefit came about. And now the workforce has changed. I think there's more women in the workforce now than men, but there's been no talk about eliminating or reducing the spousal benefit. I think the reason is fairly clear on that. Any politician who came up with that idea wouldn't last very long. So the spousal benefits are here to stay. I think it's very important that we learn about them. Basically, a spousal benefit, you're getting half of what your spouse is getting at his or her full retirement age. You will be getting that at your full retirement age. So that's why the full retirement age is so important. Knowing that, you don't want to take the spousal benefit early. You want to wait for it as long as you can. So I think—
Could you take us through an example there? Take us through an example. I mean, and maybe use an example of an amount that somebody might, you know, reasonably receive from U.S. Social Security.
Okay, I think the average benefits of Social Security is right around $2,000, maybe a little higher, a little lower. So let's use that. It's a nice round number. So I'm married. I've worked my whole life. My wife has worked her whole life. She is much more hardworking than I am. I'm a little lazy, you know, getting up 10:30 in the morning sometimes. I don't feel like working. I'm going to stay home today, watch the Met game on TV or whatever it is. So my wife has worked her whole life. She's compiled a long earnings history. Her monthly benefit is $2,000 at her full retirement age, full retirement age. So once she starts collecting her full retirement age, I can go in after when I reach my full retirement age and get that half of that $2,000. In this case, that would be $1,000. Again, half of her benefit at her full retirement age. That's what I'm going to claim at my full retirement age, 50-50. So it's a fairly easy calculation for those people at those ages.
That's, you know, I think that that's an amazing thing. Is there any requirement that one have been married for any number of years before this kicks in? Or
it has to be married for 1 year. Or if you're caring for a child of the marriage, then that 1 year is waived and there's no age requirement. If there's a child under the age of 16, that parent without the earnings record can collect a spousal benefit. So I'll give you an example. I use an example in my presentation of Billy Joel is a American singer. He's married to a woman about two thirds of his age. Billy Joel is in his early 70s. So let's say his wife is in her mid 40s. And they have two young children by virtue of the marriage. So obviously the two children don't have an earnings record. It doesn't really matter if Mrs. Billy Joel has an earnings record either, because they're all going to collect a benefit based on his earnings record. So that's how the spousal works. If you're not that 62, you can collect at an earlier age, provided there are children involved in the marriage.
That is amazing. Now, does that mean that you say if you're not retired, does that mean it's a lower payout?
Well, the family benefits, the spousal benefits, the survivor benefits we'll talk about in a little bit are based on something called a family benefit. So there's only so much that Social Security will pay on the family benefit. But in this case, if it's only Billy Joel, his wife, and one of the two daughters, they would each get 50% of what he would be getting, because there's two daughters, the cut of the pie is a little less than that. So, but they're going to get 50% if it's just a spouse and one child. If there's two children or more, then it's going to get slightly lower as the more children are added.
Wow, that strikes me as a very, very generous entitlement program. Maybe moving on to survivors. How does it work there? So you have somebody who, they wait till they're 66, they start collecting their Social Security, they have a family, say they die at age 70. What would the survivors be entitled to, and how does that work?
Well, the wife, or in this case, the spouse, would be collecting based on when the person collected. So that's another reason why I think it's very much to your advantage to delay as long as you can, because by delaying your own benefit, you're going to pass on a higher survivor benefit to your spouse. So let's give an example of a gentleman who's waited until 70 to start collecting Social Security. If something happened to him at 71 or 72, his benefit would obviously stop, but he's going to be able to pass on the higher benefit to his survivor, to his spouse. So we always use that when we're planning with couples. You know, if you're in a position to delay, that's the best thing to do, because you're going to be able to pass on a higher benefit, a higher survivor benefit to your spouse. Survivor benefits are a little different in the sense of spousal benefits, because the spousal benefit is limited to 50%, but as a survivor, you're going to be able to claim 100% of what that person was either collecting or entitled to collect when he or she passed away.
So it's is amazing. Do people typically know this?
I don't know, but it's a little frustrating to me, because I give these presentations to libraries and school districts, and I always use an example when it's a low attendance. Maybe I've had classes where four or five people show up to my Social Security class. So I say, wow, this town must know a lot about Social Security, because nobody's here tonight. So I don't think people know as much as they should, or maybe they know the basics, but there are different strategies, when to claim, what to claim, things like that. I think most people are ignorant of those strategies, anything where there's a little complexity involved.
Yeah, clearly so. Now, I found the discussion in your presentation about entitlement based on divorce, that is, being divorced and having been married to somebody, I thought that was incredibly interesting. And I invite you to elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, some people think that because they're divorced, they might not be entitled to the spousal benefit, but they do have a category divorced spousal and also divorced survivor benefits that are available based on if you've been married to the person. You have to be married for 10 years. You have to be divorced for at least 2 years. But as long as you meet those requirements, you're entitled to a divorced spousal or a divorced survivor benefit. And these are not reduced to the same amounts that we just talked about. So when I give my presentation, I use an example of somebody who's been hasn't spoke to their ex-spouse in 10 years or 20 years. How are they supposed to get that kind of information? And it's very simple, actually. All you need is three items to present to the Social Security Administration, and they'll tell you exactly what you're entitled to as a divorced spouse. All you need is a copy of the marriage license, the divorce decree, and the Social Security number of your ex-spouse. And if you have these three items, you can go to Social Security, explain the situation, and they'll be happy to tell you what you're entitled to. You don't need your ex-spouse's permission, authorization. All you need is those three items. Your ex-spouse, in fact, can get remarried, has no bearing on your ability to collect a divorced spouse, as long as you haven't gotten remarried yourself.
Is there any reason that would not apply to, say, the divorced spouse of a U.S. citizen living outside the United States?
Maybe because you don't understand or know the rules, or you think that it has some impact on your relationship to your ex-spouse. But again, your ex-spouse is not going to know that you've collected on his or her record. So other than not having that information and maybe not wanting to call up and get it, I couldn't see why somebody would be hesitant. I mean, there's money out there for you.
I am amazed and almost shocked to learn how much money there is actually on the table out there in relation to Social Security.
One of the themes of my class is really to encourage people to, you know, come to the class, learn about the class, because there is so much money out there, so much opportunity to collect as a spouse or as a survivor or as a divorced spouse, or even as a child and parents and things like that. You are entitled based on your relationship to the person who has the earnings record. So it really behooves you to know what the rules are. Otherwise, you're leaving thousands and thousands of dollars on the table just by not taking advantage of it. And unfortunately, there were some strategies that were in use. Now there's only one strategy that's limited, but I mean, you could, if you really follow the strategies and you did some planning, you could really take advantage of the system. And I guess that's one of the reasons why they took these strategies away.
Well, presumably so. I mean, you know, with all the pressure on public finances, one wonders how long this level of generosity could continue. But as you point out, that to the extent this is enshrined by law and there has to be a change in the law, I can understand legislators would be gun shy in this regard.
Right. And there are things they can do to fix the system. One of the things that I always get in my class is a question of, well, is the system falling apart? Should I be taking my benefit now because it's not going to be there in 5 years or 10 years or 15 years? And my answer to that is no. I mean, there are things they can do to fix the system. For example, they could raise the payroll tax rate. In the U.S., you pay 6.2% of your wages, which your employer matches, into the Social Security system. And I read recently where if they raise that to 7.9%, they could fix the program overnight. So there are things they can do to fix the system, repair the finances, but it's going to take politicians to step up and say, hey, we have to do this now, not in 5 years, not in 10 years.
Not very likely, not very likely, given that the goal is to get reelected. It does not sound to be a politically popular deal, does it?
I gave my presentation around the Trump-Biden debates this would have been last year, October or September of last year. And I always like to point out to people, not once during those debates was Social Security mentioned. I mean, it's an area that they don't want to touch, they don't want to talk about, because there's never the idea that, hey, this guy said this or he said that about reducing Social Security, or even has an idea about it, because they know that it's going to really hurt their election chances.
I don't even, it's so generous. I don't even see how it could be expanded or increased. I mean, this is amazing stuff.
When I hear about increasing Social Security, I have to take that with a large grain of salt, because they're just kind of, you know, they're telling people what they want to hear without really knowing what the numbers are, what the facts are behind it.
Yeah. So, you know, Dan, I know that you live in New York State and you're based out of New York State. And so the next question I'm going to ask you is perhaps a little bit unfair, because I think it would apply mostly to Americans abroad, but I invite you to take a bit of a stab at this. You know, it is conceivable that one could have a full Social Security or Social Security type benefits, say, in two countries. There is something, and I do not know a lot about this other than it exists, and it's a problem, called a windfall elimination provision, which I understand is designed to curtail that double dipping to that degree. Do you have any particular thoughts on that?
Well, the windfall elimination provision actually, John, sounds a lot worse than it is, because if you have substantial earnings for 20 years, the windfall elimination will be reduced. And at 30 years, there's no windfall provision at all. So number one, the amount that you will see your benefit reduce is only, $400 or $500. So it's not a big difference. It can't, for example, cut your benefit in half or anything like that. It's really just $400 or $500, which for most people, I'm guessing, is a smaller percentage. And again, as long as you have some earnings in your earnings history, be it 20 years or 20 to 30 years, that number itself will going to get reduced. So while it doesn't seem like it's very fair, the government is saying, hey, if you're getting a pension from somebody else, whether it's a state government, a local government, or a foreign government corporation, we don't feel as though we should give you another benefit as well. So it's one of the first instances, the only instances I could see where Social Security is kind of doing the right thing in the sense that they're not being overly generous. So we talked about spousal and survivor benefits being overly generous. This might be a case where they're, I think they're being a little bit more reasonable. Social Security is not supposed to give people money so they can go on vacations and buy fancy cars and things like that. It's really there to not supplement, but replace the income that you've lost from not working.
Well, you know, it is clear to me that Social Security benefits in the United States are far more generous than the equivalent in Canada, Canada Pension Plan, and this sort of stuff. I mean, I think all of these things have self-adjusting mechanisms wherever you live. But there is no doubt that, you know, on sort of the continuum of benefits throughout the world, that Social Security is right there at the top. And that's why I think people need to incorporate this into their financial and retirement thinking. And I'm sure that you would agree. And that's why you do this kind of teaching, right?
Well, when we have a meeting with a client about retirement planning, that's the first question we ask them is, we need, or can you give us a Social Security statement? What are your Social Security benefits? Because without that, there's really no point in trying to plan otherwise. I met with a client the other day and they talked about the money's coming in. And I said, well, what about your Social Security benefit? What are you expecting? What are you anticipating? Well, I don't know. You know, we haven't gotten the statement or we haven't done anything when it comes to Social Security. So to me, you can't do any planning for retirement without knowing what your Social Security benefits are going to be. And they're fairly easy to get. All you have to do is go on to the government website, socialsecurity.gov, and answer a few questions and you'll be able to download your statement. So it's very important and the information is out there. It's very easy for you to get. And as I said, I don't see how you can plan for retirement without knowing what your Social Security benefit is.
Yeah, and I think that financial retirement planning is something that, as a general principle, people have trouble with, but I think particularly, you know, Americans abroad are so beaten down and disabled by, you know, the effects of a U.S. tax system that actually taxes them more punitively than people inside the United States, that I think financial retirement planning is particularly hard for them. And I think there's a certain, you know, psychological barrier, you know, that people need to break out of. And a week from now, you know, we're going to reconvene and talk about that a little bit, because this stuff is so, so important. But, you know, you certainly have convinced me that this Social Security thing is a big, big deal. And I think it's, for a lot of people, I agree with you. I mean, it's such a big deal. That's where they should start, because, you know, you're talking like 8% guaranteed return by delaying from 66 to 70. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Well, that and the fact that, again, this is a lifetime benefit. This is not ending at when you reach 70 or 75 or whatever. This is a lifetime benefit. So you really have to plan accordingly, knowing that this is going to be coming for your entire lifetime, knowing that it's adjusted for cost of living. For example, next year's benefit goes up by 5.9% based on the cost of living adjustment. So it's something that you have to plan on. And I'm always a little upset when people don't know or don't appreciate the fact that, again, it's Social Security, it's what you put in, what you get out of the system. There's no penalties for continuing to work and possibly adding to that benefit if your earnings are going up later in life. And it's something that's going to last your entire life. It's going to keep pace with inflation. And again, you're going to be able to pass it on to a spouse or in some cases other survivor or other people that you're related to as a survivor benefit. So there's really a lot to it. And it's best to, if you're not familiar with the rules, to talk to somebody who is familiar with the rules and different features. What's available to me? How do I expand or extend the benefit as much as possible?
Yeah, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, there there are certain tax benefits. I don't think that Social Security is taxed to the same degree as other types of things. Is that correct?
Well, Social Security, I like to use a rule of thumb. Unless Social Security is your only source of income, it is likely that it will be taxable by the federal government. A lot of the state governments exclude it. I live in New York. New York does not include Social Security in its income tax calculations, New Jersey as well. But the IRS, the federal government, will include it. And then it's a question of, based on your modified adjusted gross income, and if those levels exceed a threshold, then it will be includable, either 50% or 85% of the benefit will be taxable. So,
well, so there is, I mean, it's not fully taxed the way a lot of other types of investors are. And, you know, I mentioned that partly because, you know, I really, it's very interesting to talk to you because, you know, you're, as I say, in a sense, you're a one-stop shop because you're looking at this from, you know, all these different dimensions, including, this is incredible. You're doing 150 tax returns for people a year.
Well, last year I did 150. Most of them aren't very, well, the hardest part for most of them is getting the information from the people, John. And once I get the information, then it's fairly straightforward. The tax software program that I use is very powerful. So that's really the biggest problem, is actually getting the information from everybody. But once it's there, it's okay. It's not so
surely bad. Surely you're not suggesting to me that people aren't enthusiastic about doing their tax returns.
No, they're not enthusiastic. Most people are procrastinators. So they figure as long as they can wait until the first week in April, then it's okay. You know, I have nothing else going on, so it's fine by me.
All right. Well, this is great. And, you know, so I think the key is, so, you know, this is great information and why people should think about this stuff. And I really look forward to reconnecting with you next week, where we talk about sort of, you know, the more of, you know, motivational, psychological, you know, all these issues surrounding financial planning. So, you know, I'm afraid to ask you to add anything about Social Security because it was so good that I'm afraid you might knock something loose. So
during my presentation, I try to stress to people that the decision to take, when to take, is individual based on their own personal situation and circumstances. But in general, everything I've read, everything I see on TV, different presentations, it's always best to wait as long as you can. You should think about taking from other resources that you have. Try to delay Social Security as long as you can. And if there's a couple, a married, a wife, a male spouse, usually a good rule of thumb is to have the spouse with the higher earnings record, the higher benefit, take a delay as long as they can. So that's kind of
absolutely. Yeah, that makes an awful lot of sense to me.
That's a rule of thumb that I use. And again, I'm not going to tell somebody when to take Social Security. But if you're in a position to delay, if you have other resources, then it's usually the best thing to do.
All right. Well, this is great. So I'm speaking with Dan Mazzola. You can find him at AmericanPortfolios.com. He has a phone number, 516-783-9540. And I thank you so much for this. And I look forward to connecting with you next week. This has been great.
Well, thank you very much, John. It's been my pleasure, and hopefully we can do this on a more regular basis.
Absolutely.